All right, I think we're ripping. All right, we are here with Andre Heikkil Jr. Andre, tell the people, here's what we need to know, right? What are your five favorite features about Apollo? Go.
Dude, I can only list five? This is going to be tough.
All right. Yeah. Anyway, introduce yourself because it'll make sense why I asked you that question.
Yeah, I'm public enemy number one of Apollo. Is usually how I go around introducing myself. No, I'm kidding. Dude, I'm just I would say an entrepreneur at heart. Since I was really a kid, and I just love building businesses. And I'm just an entrepreneur, dude. And that's really it. And I have this idea that I've been sharing when people kind of ask me this question is like, what do you do? And it's like, I leverage businesses to fulfill like three needs that I feel every man has, which is wealth, purpose, and fun. And so like, I build businesses to create wealth. I build businesses to fulfill my purpose, which is to help past versions of myself, right? Through coaching programs and different products that I put on the market. And then I fulfill the need to have fun through business as well, because business is fun for me. And podcasting is part of business as well, which is a really fun aspect. So that's me in a nutshell.
Sweet. Love it. Quick details. Co-founder of KnowledgeX, Client Ascension, List Kit, the Stick
probably
Talk
a bunch
podcast.
Probably a bunch more we don't know about.
Probably like a bunch. We should be like, yeah, we don't do NDAs here, so we're going to just reveal all your secrets.
Yeah.
Module one of Client Ascension is this. And
tell the people, Andre, tell the people who don't know about the companies you run. What are the companies you're running, and what do they do?
Yeah, so they're really like the three core business models that everyone is kind of playing around with these days. So you have the agency model, which is where we got our start, which was KnowledgeX, cold email lead generation agency. And then we have a coaching program that is Client Ascension, which again, people are very familiar with coaching as a business model. And then we have ListKit, which is a SaaS. All of them really have to do with the same core concept, which is helping people get leads through cold email, right? Like KnowledgeX is a done-for-you cold email service-based business. Client Ascension is teaching businesses how to do cold email to grow their business in more of a coaching and consulting landscape. And then ListKit is selling data that people then use in their cold email campaigns. So all of them serve the same target market, just in different fashions, which is why they're all different business models. But those are the three businesses, yeah.
Love it. So most people will probably know you because of Client Ascension. But for those people who don't know, I mean, like, ListKit is now your baby. Like, you guys have been ripping it up. Like, tell people about ListKit. What is ListKit all about? Where you guys are at? I know you have a crazy growth story. Like, you went from, like, zero to God knows what MRR in like a couple of months. So tell the people a bit about who don't know about ListKit. What's that thing all about?
Yeah, ListKit's been a crazy journey, man. So when we started the agency KnowledgeX a couple of years ago, the one internal process that always made me want to rip my hair out was building leads lists. And not just made me want to rip my hair out, but also really hindered us from getting the best possible results for our clients, because it was just such a bottleneck to be able to do it at scale. Back in the day, and even still now, like, Apollo really limits on how much you can export from their platform. They make it really hard for you to export leads from their platform. And then once you export the leads, you realize only 60% are valid. And so you have to go back into Apollo to get the full amount that you actually intended to get when you first went in there. And so it's just this whole process that nobody likes. And so we set out to build a list building service because we knew other agencies like KnowledgeX could benefit from that, like outsourcing that really intense process to our team of VAs that we had internally for our agency. And then over time, our mission really just became like, we want to create an actual product, like a self-serve product similar to Apollo that solves for all of those needs, which is like being able to get large leads lists in just a couple of clicks, making sure that the leads lists are all verified leads, so you never have to go back in and re-verify them or pay for stuff that you don't use. So we set out to solve all of those issues. And so that's really what ListKit is. It's basically a similar platform to the likes of Apollo or ZoomInfo. But the way we're different is we make it really easy to get high volume leads lists really quickly. And we also make it so that the leads on those lists are all verified already for you without having to use any other secondary tools on the market like a Neverbounce or a Million Verifier, because it's just the time and the cost they add up. And there's all these other things we're doing now too. But dude, building a SaaS has been like, I was telling someone at dinner last night this actually, I feel like with Client Ascension, there's a lot more room or margin for error. Like you can make a mistake in a coaching right. business and you don't really get penalized for as much as you do in other business models. But with SaaS, dude, like you have to be so sharp because you're running a high volume in terms of customers, a high volume business with most likely low profit margins because you're spending so much money on devs and hosting and software expenses and tools and marketing and whatever else you're spending on, which is why also SaaS businesses are the ones that go out and get a bunch of venture capital. We didn't.
Right.
And so we're playing from behind. And so it's just, you have to be so sharp, so dialed in with your numbers, with your systems, with your team and where every dollar goes. And so it's just kind of reawakened me to just like my love for business and like really getting into the details and the nitty gritty, which has been a cool experience.
I love it. What has been, when did you guys start ListKit and how old is it? What's the team like? I know you guys have a technical co-founder. So tell us the origin story of ListKit. Like when did that idea come to fruition and how long did it take for you guys to actually build a business around it?
Yeah. So it's a really cool story, bro, because we started the business, which this is a shocking answer for most people that are familiar with ListKit, but we started back in July of 2021. So almost 3 years ago at this point. And again, when we started, it was like an outsourced service. It was not a SaaS, but we had the intention of eventually turning it into a SaaS. How do we do that? Well, we sell a service that can then go in and fund a SaaS. And that's what we did. So we're making like $10,000 to $20,000 a month from the productized service, if you will. And that was all being poured into development efforts. So we would hire a developer agency and tell them what we wanted. They'd design it, they'd push it, and it wouldn't work. And we did that over and over and over again. We literally invested every single dollar from the business, which was, it was a freaking awesome business, dude. Like very low time input, very high profit margin, really high success rate and like customer feedback scores. But we were not making or seeing a single dollar of that because we were reinvesting it into the development of the software. After doing that for about a year and a half, all the way up until October of 2022, we were pretty much burnt out. Meaning like we tried everything. We hired all the developer agencies. We went through all the different staffing firms and we could just not find someone that could bring our vision to life. And so I was ready to just shut it down and you know, pour that additional time and focus into the agency, into the coaching program. At that time, we were hosting our first event for the coaching program, Client Ascension, in Tampa. And one of our clients had flown out from Portugal. And he was there the night before the event. So we figured we'd, you know, go entertain him and have cigars with him, at least, since he made the trip that far out. And we were sitting having cigars and we were telling him how, like, you know, we invested over $100,000 at that point in trying to build the software. Nothing works. At this point, we're pretty much shutting this down. But here's at least what we were trying to do with it, because he was asking questions about it. And right there, it was like he came alive. And that's Oliver, who's now our CTO and who's really been able to make this project a reality. He came alive because to him, like it was super clear on what needed to happen from like a development side of things to bring this product or this vision to life. And so right the next day, we went for lunch. We ended up discussing, you know, what a potential partnership could look like. And then really like that next week, we inked the paper and just went to work on it. And within 6 months of that event or 7 months of that event, we actually had the product where we wanted it to be. And then we finally launched in July of 2023. So there was kind of like two launches of the company, July 2021 productized service all the way up until July 2023, which is when the SaaS actually formed. So really we started from zero In 2021, we started from zero again in 2023, but with obviously a lot more resources available to us. And that's why we were able to scale the software after launching in July 2023 to $1 million in ARR in less than 3 months, which like broke all the records for anyone in our industry. But it's kind of misleading because we had, you know, 2 years of customers built up and brand recognition built up and and all that stuff. So.
Yeah. So what did Oliver change? Like, I'm super curious, like from the technical perspective, like what was different about Oliver's approach compared to your previous devs?
Yeah. So really, like if you're trying to build a product similar to an Apollo or a Zoom Info, the struggle is not like getting the data. Everyone knows where to go and access, you know, data. Like people sell data. It's pretty, you know, available to the market. The problem is building an infrastructure that can search and sort through that data in the matter of milliseconds, right? Because when you go into an Apollo and you put in keyword agency, it has to now search through millions of records and give you the results, which could be millions of results as well, within milliseconds, and display those to you with all the other information associated. And so the infrastructure to build that was really hard to come by. And then not only that, but once the infrastructure is built and you want to go and parlay in more data, how do you process that data so that it matches the way your data in the existing database already exists? Because like you might get a data set from this vendor and then another vendor you want to tack on their data set. What if the columns are not all ordered the same way? Or what if there are some columns that this data set has that the other data set has? And then even more importantly, what about the duplicates? What if the data set over here has the same records that the data set over here has? How do you know which one is more accurate or more recent or more up to date? And so that was a huge part of it, just having a vision for the actual infrastructure to process data in lightning fast speeds. And then also on the back end, like how does the triple verification process work? Like nobody could get that figured out, even though, you know, APIs are pretty widely accessible. It's not just like you take an API off a website from one of these verifier tools and stack it onto the tech stack. Like there was real like infrastructure in working with those actual products and those developers and those API teams to figure out how to make it work as well. So you just very clearly understood like the bottleneck that we were running into without much information from us telling them that was the bottleneck. And it just very clearly, like right away, made sense that this guy knew exactly what we were trying to do, maybe even better than we understood what we were trying to do. And he was very convicted in the fact that he could bring it to life with the team and the experience that he had from his other ventures. And lo and behold, that's exactly what he was able to do.
What happened.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it. I have two key points that you basically, that sort of stood out to me. And that was the first thing is like, you guys started Liskit as a service business first, which means like, were you trying to validate the idea before it? Were you sort of scratching your own itch? I know a lot of people are like, SaaS is now the cool trendy thing. Everyone's trying to do a SaaS. But as you said, it's like, it's the reason why everyone's raising funds. It's like, it's the most competitive of the industries there exist. That's why like it gets the most funding. It has the highest multiples. Why or how, or like, what was the thinking process of starting Liskit as a service business first to either one, scratch your own itch or, you know, just even validate the need? Was there like some thought process put into that or from the get go?
Yeah. Great question, bro. So
yeah,
the reason we started Liskit, funny enough, was because I read a book called Built to Sell. That was the entire basis for starting Liskit. Like I had no idea in my head that we wanted to do SaaS or that we wanted to do a productized service until I read this book called Built to Sell. So the whole premise of this book is really just like this disgruntled agency owner that thought he's going to be able to exit his agency, and he's ready to exit his agency because he's burning out and he's not really enjoying running the agency anymore. And when he goes to get a valuation on it, they basically tell him his agency's worthless. And then he works with a guy who exited his agency for a multiple that this guy would love to, you know, exit his agency at. And it basically walks you through the process of all the changes they made to make his agency like a business that can actually sell. And the whole process really was just making the agency more productized. And I could really relate to the whole story there because we were running the cold email agency at the time. And there are so many variables at play. We were running it as a pay-per-call performance-based agency. So there was no predictability. It was the furthest thing an agency can be from productized, was what we were running. So it just became very clear to me that if we wanted any exit value, right, if we wanted to fulfill that first ring I mentioned earlier, that is building wealth. It's like the need amongst, you know, men that are like have high standards or whatever. We needed to make a productized service. And the first thing that came to mind was like, let's just, because in the book, the example was like, they just made logos, nothing else. It was a design agency that only made logos. So they went from like a full service design agency to just doing logos. And so I looked at our cold email lead gen agency and was like, instead of doing all of the cold email stuff, let's just do the list building. Like basically piece out one aspect of it that we're really, really good at and have a really repeatable process for and just do that. And so it was really testing that thesis. I always knew as well, once I got more into the details of like, okay, here's ListKit, here's what it's for, that we would eventually want to build a SaaS. But the first goal was to just build a productized service that we could either build up and exit as a productized service or, you know, roll all of that money into a SaaS.
Yeah, love it. So you've run a few different agencies or a few different business models. You mentioned that SaaS has taught you the need for precision, I suppose, right? But for people that have never run a coaching offer, for people that have, you know, you mentioned the SaaS thing. I think we got a pretty good deal there or understanding there. For people that have never run an agency or a coaching program, what are some things you've learned about the differences between the three different business models that people that have never tried wouldn't know?
Yeah, well, I think with the coaching business is probably the most fun out of all of them because to run a successful coaching business, nobody's going to pay you to be their coach if they don't already know, like, and trust you. And so when somebody already knows, likes, and trusts you, they favor whatever it is you do from there. Whereas if someone comes into your agency offering, it doesn't really have to do anything with you. It's just purely the service and, more importantly, the results that that service can get for that person. So the frame that someone comes into an agency service versus that someone that comes into a coaching service, you're going to enjoy the coaching clients way more because they already like you, right? So they're already convinced that joining your program was the right decision and was what they needed for their business, regardless of the results. And more so with the coaching business, a big part of that as well is like, it's not all on you to get the results. It's really all on them. It's they just have to follow the playbook and in the roadmap that you've outlined for them. And so you enjoy running a coaching business a lot more. I enjoy running a coaching business a lot more. And because in a way, it takes a lot of the responsibility off yourself, which is how business should be done in the first place, right? Like it never really made sense to me as to like how another business is responsible for someone else's business's growth, right? Like everyone is responsible for their own business's growth. But a lot of disgruntled clients at agencies, you know, don't think that way. And it makes complete sense. Obviously there's more we can get into with that. But anyways, running a coaching business, you're just dealing with a completely different frame that a client enters in with. And not to say like, oh, great, he's already happy, I don't need to do anything. It just makes it a lot easier and a lot more fun and exciting to help and service that person. Like it motivates and encourages you more to service that person right out of the gates rather than the person that's like already doubting you and is already kind of pissed off that the onboarding process took longer than they thought it would and they're not getting results quick enough. And so even from a client perspective, I've tried to, you know, to implement that when I'm working with agencies, right? Like being a good client is such a key learning because we all work with agencies. And I think really a big impact of how agencies perform is how you as a client like show up and communicate with the agency? Do you communicate that you're on the same team as them, or do you really try to like, it almost feels like in a way clients are like cheering for the downfall of the agency they hired in the first place. Like they want them to fail in a way, which is just never made sense to me. So it definitely helped me to see the different frames that people come into these business models with. And then SaaS is so totally different because it's just high volume, right? Like we have 300 students in a coaching program like Client Ascension. I know every single one of them by name and like by face. If I saw them, dude, if I saw a ListKit customer on the street, I'd have no idea. And it could be one of our highest paying ListKit customers. It's just because there's so many more of them, which was hard for me at first because I went from really low volume, really high touch businesses like an agency and a coaching model to a SaaS, which is high volume. And so like I wanted to talk to everyone, meet everyone, help everyone, but you just can't do that in the same way you could at least for a coaching business or an agency model. So those I would say were the main things I picked up on.
All of your businesses you're currently running, both ListKit and Client Ascension and KnowledgeX that you used to run, these were all partnerships. Like you didn't start these businesses solo. What was the reason behind that?
Yeah, dude. So, I mean, I've been in entrepreneurship for years before I started any of these businesses, but without much success at all. And so it got to a point where I realized, like, it became very clear to me, like, what business actually is. Like, business is just marketing and then sales and then fulfillment, right? And, like, that was a huge breakthrough for me at the time because it finally made sense of, like, how a business is supposed to operate from start to finish. And then what I then realized even more so is, like, out of those three things the business needs to operate successfully, I'm only really good at and interested in doing one of them. Like a reason why past businesses didn't work out is because I'm just not sales oriented. I'm not great at sales. And I just don't like it enough to focus on it as much as I would need to have a successful business. So I was really, I guess, self-aware of my own strengths and weaknesses, or at least likes and dislikes. And I knew that if I was able to double down on the things that I was good at and the things that I also like to do, and then I found people in each of the other categories that are required to have a successful business from start to finish, then it would just run a lot more smoothly. And that's exactly what we did. Like with Dan, my cousin, he, for every venture, ListKit, KnowledgeX, Client Ascension, he's in charge of sales. Like I've never been on a sales call for ListKit, Client Ascension, or KnowledgeX ever. Which is crazy because we've done millions and millions of dollars of sales and I'm one of the founders. I've never been on a sales call for any of those businesses because Dan owns that part of the business. He's in charge of sales. He manages the sales teams. He takes the sales calls so that I don't have to. And then also Dan doesn't have to do fulfillment because he hates fulfillment. He doesn't want to have to talk to the clients once he, you know, grabs their money. Or gets them to pay. So
like Dan, if you're listening to this, we love you. We love you, dude. Yeah.
But like
Dan is a very ethical, kind person, moral person. Yeah. You know, he cares about student results.
He cares more about your money. But I care. So that's the thing. That's okay though. I care about student results. So it's not that Dan is now also in charge of fulfillment and he's so focused on sales that he can't fulfill well enough. It's like, no, he then sends them to me and all I care about is fulfillment. And so as a client or from a customer perspective, you're getting the best experience at each step of the way. You're getting the best marketing experience. You're getting the best experience with our sales team and you're getting the best experience with our fulfillment team because we have the best people in place for each of those steps of the way. And I understand like this is where there's probably the biggest disconnect, even with our students and Client Ascension. It's really hard for them to sit and listen to my advice because I have it so good in terms of the team that we have established at each of the businesses and how well we have our roles defined. I have to admit that's probably my biggest success. And a lot of it wasn't even my own doing, but my biggest success was assembling the team of co-founders that I have. And it's evident in the fact that we were able to run up seven figures with an agency, run up seven figures with a coaching program, and now run up seven figures with a SaaS, all with that same core team. Like, there's a reason for that.
For the students you interact with in Client Ascension, is it easy for you to spot whether people are in the right role for them, or like whether somebody is like a natural marketing genius or fulfillment person or you know, salesperson, or are there times when people don't like intuitively understand what role they should be in?
Yeah. So the biggest thing that I tell people is it's never 100%, right? Like it's never, I'm 100% sales focused or I'm 100% fulfillment focused. If you're a business owner or a co-founder, you're going to have to do all of those things in some capacity. And you should be inclined and interested in doing all of those things in some capacity. So like when I say marketing, sales, and fulfillment, dude, I still do marketing. Like I'm tweeting every day. I'm making YouTube videos. I'm thinking of different angles we can take for all the offers we're selling. But that's not my main thing. My main thing is product and fulfillment and student success, right? But I'm still thinking in terms of what do we need on the marketing side? What do we need on the sales side? So I would say students ask me this all the time. They're like, well, I'm not an operator. Well, I'm kind of both. And I'm like, that's good. Like that's good. But there's definitely something that you're better at and enjoy more. But the only way to know that is through experience. Like I knew I didn't like sales after working at a cold call agency, making cold calls and doing sales for over a year. Like I knew that that's not something I wanted to continue doing for the rest of my life, let alone another day. And same with marketing. Like I hated making funnels when we were running an agency a couple of years back. I hated it. Like I hated designing funnels. I hated trying to think of the headlines and the subheadlines and then creating VSLs and seeing how many people watched the VSL and then how many people went through the call booking page and how many people showed up to the call and the emails that go in between. Like I hated that stuff and I just couldn't see myself doing that long term. But then fulfillment, right? That's where I really fell in love and that's where I really started to enjoy the process and come up with the best ideas and just do my best work. But I didn't just guess that. I actually had experience in all aspects of the business, which I believe every business owner needs. Like don't just pick marketing, sales, and fulfillment and just do that. Like do all of them. And then start to lean more into whichever one you're best at and enjoy the most. And then bring in people or replace people, or maybe you already have the people to do the other things.
Yeah, we run into that too. Like, so I was putting together a YouTube video today and realizing one of the reasons that people sometimes like over index on one is because they're uncomfortable. So what we get a lot of times is like, I have to tell people like, no, don't automate this. Like you're not ready for this. Like we're ending your contract or we're not selling you at all. I don't care how much you want this like little automation. You just don't have enough customers, right? And so I think sometimes like people over index on stuff they're comfortable with at the expense of stuff that needs to get done, right? And so if you're a natural sales and marketing person, you could make the excuse like, oh, I'm just like a natural. This is what I do. But like if your customers are having a terrible experience, like you need to fix that. Like
yeah.
It doesn't matter. Like I think to a degree, like you need to be comfortable enough at all elements of the job, at least to teach yourself that you're like a pussy. You know what I mean? You're not like just ignoring the job, like the stuff that needs to get done. Whether you feel like, I mean, you can make the excuse like, oh, I'm not natural with marketing. Somebody else, like we get this all the time. Like people will reach out. They're like, hey, so, I had a guy booked a call. He was like, I'm looking for an automated way to get to $400,000 a month as quickly as possible with like a fully automated business. I don't want to do anything. And I'm at $0 a month now. And I'm like, dude, you're delusional. Like you're completely delusional. And similarly, there's people that are like, hey, I want to do fulfillment. I'm great at fulfillment, but I just need someone to like sell everything, do all the marketing and come up with the offer for me. And then I'll fulfill in the back end. And you're like, Timmy, I'll look at that and go like, and you expect to have somebody like give you any money for this, like more than like what a VA would make. Like, no, you're a VA at that point. Like you're not a business owner. You don't have equity. You have a VA job.
Exactly.
So yeah, you have to be like, there's a certain like, and part of it is like, I wonder like, what is like, I think maybe it raises a question, like what is entrepreneurship, right? Cause you can't do just like, you can't be like an Instagram influencer who has no offer and no ability to provide value to the marketplace.
Well, you're just an employee. I just go hire that person. Yep. Why would I give them in my business?
Right. Why would I give you equity when I could just hire that exact role, probably a better talent for like $1,000 a month?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the big difference so I'm like really against this whole visionary versus integrator thing, because I think it's miseducating people or misleading people as to like what the expectation actually is. Like, there's not a visionary that just visions and an integrator that just integrates. Like, you have to do both. Like, when I read that book, I'm like confused. I'm like, I'm both of these people. I am a visionary and an integrator. And I feel that most business owners could relate to that. Like, I understand the differences, and someone needs to lean more into one side and someone needs to lean more into the other. But like, the fact that there's just visionary or integrator, no in between, I think confuse a lot of people and have, you know, them asking these same questions.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, what was that? I lost my train of thought here. Like, so I had this, this conversation with a few friends years ago about like, what's like the ultimate test of personal development for men. Right. Here's my theory, guys. Like, let me know if this makes sense, right? I think it is, you have to book a flight to a foreign country, make like your first $1,000 or $10,000 with your own business, and pick up a local girl. And the reason for that is like, the other thing was do some kind of like physical feat that requires like not just consistency, but like actual training, right? So, you know, run a marathon, deadlift a certain amount of weight, like something that requires more than just like a milestone that requires more than just consistency. Cause you could like for business, like you could read every book ever written.
Yeah.
You could do all the courses. You could tweet out lots, but if no one's paying you, like the things you're doing they're not working. Like if you can't hit like $1,000 or $10,000 in just revenue, whether it's per month or just pure money in the bank, cash collected, you know, you're not doing something right. And if you're training, if you're going to the gym consistently and you're not getting stronger, like you're not training correctly. Yeah. And if you think you're like a friendly, nice, confident, masculine person and no women are interested in you, like women are really good bullshit detectors, right? And I think like, so women, muscle and money are the best bullshit detectors on the planet. And I'm, you know, I think it's super wise what you said about how you have to do everything, or you have to be able to do everything. I think there's like I wonder if there's a minimum threshold for that. Like, I know for Client Ascension, Tony and I met in Client Ascension, which is an awesome program. Everybody, you should join it if you want to make more money. And I'll drop my ListKit affiliate link below. You can sign up for ListKit and I'll get paid a lot of money. I actually got a ListKit affiliate payout and I was like, where is this link? Like, I don't know where the link is, but I've gotten like,
let's go,
$300 or $400 from my ListKit affiliate. I don't know how. Anyway, so ListKit affiliates, it's great. They pay you against your will. It's great. So anyway, Client Ascension has a guarantee. I don't know if you guys sell the guarantee, but it was when I joined, it was like, hey, this guarantee is conditional on you making 10K already. And I didn't have that. Right. I was like, no, I for sure could do this. Like, it's going to be cool. But I wonder if there's a certain wisdom to that. Right. So getting to 5K a month or 1K a month or 10K a month or whatever the number is, you know, is a sign that you have enough of the other parts of the business, like enough sales acumen or enough marketing acumen that you can get the minimum to at least sell that amount, and then use other ingredients to scale. I think there's probably something to that, like having some made up number that's because everybody, you know, the people that are at zero are the people that are most plentiful, but you for sure can't help somebody at zero with Client Ascension, and you for sure can't help somebody at zero with automation or operations, because like there's nothing to optimize.
Yeah. Yeah. They have to prove themselves. And I think a great measure of them proving themselves is, get to $10,000 a month, however it takes to get there. Awesome. Like, yeah, whatever you need to do to get there.
Right. Brute force.
Brute force your way to 10K a month. Like, that's the ultimate test for are you built for this or not? And, like, anybody should be able to do just that on their own. Like, dude, I had agencies before any of the ones we've talked about on here that were at $10,000 to $20,000 a month that I just brute forced either selling through DMs. Maybe I got on some sales calls for those businesses. Maybe I did more marketing than I would be doing now. I built the funnel. I built the website. Like, you could brute force your way to 10K a month. And that's the ultimate test, I think, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the same thing is true, like, with a lot of things. Like, I think there's lots of, like, physical pursuits that you could brute force your way to. I wouldn't consider myself to be naturally athletic by any stretch, but, like, I think anybody can brute force, like, a marathon. A marathon's, like, millions of people every single day do a marathon. It is, like, if you want to be a remotely consistent marathon, super easy. You know, I think, like, being remotely charming and social, like, you don't have to take a pickup course or whatever to charm a woman. Cause guess what? Like, all of your ancestors going back to the beginning of time have all done it at least.
How do you, like, think you're here?
They've done it at least once, right? Like, they were all successful. And there was a time when everybody was an entrepreneur, right? The whole, like, industrial revolution is a relatively recent thing. And so, like, selling things, what's that book? Like, is it Daniel Pink? Like, To Sell Is Human. These are natural things that everybody has in them. Yeah. Now we're getting into, like, mindset stuff.
I love it.
I wanted to ask you, Andre. So I grew up going to church every Sunday, youth group every Sunday night. You're a Christian. I believe that's currently the case, or whatever. Did you grow up going to church? Was that something that you came to in adulthood? Like, because, like, anybody who's spent any amount of time in the entrepreneurship space now anyway has seen, like, I've noticed it, like, a shift towards religion of different kinds, right? Whether people are, like, Buddhist and doing the meditation thing, or into, like, Eastern religion, like, so Andrew Tate, I think, he's like Muslim or something now. But talk to us about, like, your faith and how that impacts your journey, your life.
I think the number one thing that faith allows me or reminds me or empowers me to do or holds me accountable to doing even is always lead to serve, right? Like, and that's what business is. So, like, I've not been traumatized, but, like, I've seen really bad examples growing up of, like, businesses that are not in business for the good of other people. Like, they're in business for a profit or just to make money. And that gave me, and of course a lot of other people in society, right, because there's a negative outlook on money and business in general, just a negative perception of what business really is. Whereas if you have some sort of faith backing you, like Christianity for me, like, it's holding me accountable to, like, everything I do is to serve others. And so, especially business, like, the reason I am so, like, such a fan of business and so bullish on businesses and being an entrepreneur is because it's, like, the best opportunity out there to serve others, like, at the highest level. Like, you can serve people at the highest level, like what we do through Client Ascension. And I believe we're serving people through products like ListKit and with everything that we're doing. And I mean, there's so much we could get into, but yeah, like, for me, I was growing up Catholic. I went to church, I went to Catholic school, all that sort of stuff. But to me, like, all my life, it never really clicked as to, like, why. It's just how I grew up, and it didn't really mean much to me until, like, I really got into business. Like, through business is how I found God, really. And it just really helped me understand, like, the importance of the work that I do and why I'm doing the work that I do. And also that it has nothing to do with me. I think for the longest time I struggled early on in entrepreneurship because I so badly wanted to control the output of things. And the exact reason I quit businesses before in the past were because of the outputs not being there, or as much as I wanted them to be there. So, like, I have it on my wall right above my desk. It says live in the day, measure by the decade. And really what that boils down to is inputs over outputs. And you can only truly believe in that if you take yourself out of the equation and put like God in the equation, essentially, meaning I can do the work, but I can never control the output. Like I can send all the cold emails, but I can't control how many people respond positively and how many book a call and how many close. Like no matter how good Dan is at sales, he can't control the output of what's going to happen on that sales call. Only God can, or at least that's my belief. And so I'm just focused on the inputs, and the outputs are not my doing. They're the doing of God. And as soon as I realized that, like I've cast such a longer term vision on everything that I'm doing. And I'm not playing a short term game where, you know, I send a bunch of emails, do a bunch of work, I don't see the results right away, and I get demotivated and I quit and I jump to the next best thing. Shiny object syndrome, right? You've heard that before. And so, yeah, I mean, faith is just helped me in business, and I've found it through business, which is why I have such a love for business. And even just the more I dive into like the Bible and understanding what was written in the Bible and how much it has to do with business, the more eye-opening it is to me and more powerful it is to me. Like even in Genesis, like the first book of the Bible, in the first chapter, like literally on the first page, like it talks about how like God is a God of creation, and like we as humans are supposed to be like our God. Like it tells us that. And so how do we be like God? Well, we have to be creative. And so what's more creative than starting a business literally out of nothing? And so that's what gets me so excited about business, and the conviction that it's doing, you know, what God intended for my life. And that's why I think I'll succeed, and I've had the success that I've had, and will continue to.
Awesome. I love that. I'm a huge fan of like, yeah, people who create things as well. Well, anything like a book, a restaurant, an event, an app, a SaaS, whatever. There's something so interesting about people that do that. And to me, like the process of going through life and just participating in other people's things is just sounds depressing to me.
Yeah,
and like I can see how it's very easy. Like I would, you know, much rather have somebody else make me dinner than like start my own restaurant. For sure, it's way easier. But when you look at something you've created, whether it's a physical thing, a one-time event for friends, whatever, a business, it's for those that have never experienced that, man, it's cool.
Like, as the wizard would say, exert shit into the world.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes,
that's true.
Yeah, dude, like how cool of a feeling is it? Like for me, it's like, it's just so cool to see like someone logging into ListKit and using it to grow their business. It's like something that I had just created, not myself, but like many people involved in that creation process. But that's something we just created. And like, even for you guys, like seeing like an automation that you create for a client that saves them a bunch of time and does all these things behind the scenes that helps their clients or their end customers. It's just, dude, that's where all of the fulfillment comes from, is creating things from scratch. And as Ryan said, it's a lot easier to just have it created for you and served to you, but then there's no fulfillment in it. And so, yeah.
Yeah. I did, I Tony, I'm sure you have one. I have a selfish one that I wanted to ask all about.
Right, go for it.
Well, I know. I feel like I've been selfish here. So,
No. My question, and this is Andre, this is turning to be a question we ask all the time, and I think it's a good one to wrap as well, is where does Andre go in the next 2-3 years? What's the plan? Where do you go personally, and where does your business go?
Dude, my whole thing is wherever God takes me. Like I'm doubling down on what I said in my last answer, is like I'm so detached from the output. I used to be the guy that would tell you my 5-year vision or my 10-year vision, and this is what I'm gonna do, and this is where the businesses are gonna be. Like my whole thing is like I don't set goals anymore, because to me, like goals in theory are broken. Like goals are a specific outcome by a specific date. And for me to think that I can control outcomes by a specific date or on a specific timeline, I think is silly, and it's never worked out for me. And not to say that's a bad thing. Like I'll set goals and then I'll end up not hitting those goals at all, but I did all these other amazing things that I had never even thought would you know, be a thing. So for me, it's like my goal is to show up every single day and to like put my best foot forward and do the best work possible and to continue to learn and to continue to grow and to continue to serve people as much as I can. So like my goals are more input focused. Like I want to continue showing up every single day to grow Client Ascension, to grow ListKit, and wherever that leads, you know, that's where I'm willing to go. And to me, it's more exciting, dude. Like I don't like predictability. Like if you could tell me like, oh, my goal is to do this and to exit for this and to grow this to that, and like that actually happens, like that would be kind of boring. Like I love keeping the future like open-ended and in somebody else's hands, especially God, because I know God's plan is probably good for me. It definitely is good for me. So I just don't set goals because it's never really worked for me. And I'm just interested to see the path that I get taken down. And instead, I put all that energy and focus towards showing up every single day. Like, I have goals and bigger visions and ideas. Like, Client Ascension, I want Client Ascension in a way to, like, become the gold standard of education for not just agency owners, but, like, younger entrepreneurs in general. Like, the same person I was when I graduated high school and I felt lost having the only option in front of me to go to school when I felt like school wasn't really for me. Like I want Client Ascension to be able to eventually reach all of the people that feel that way, not just the agency owners on a place like Money Twitter and with ListKit. Like I want all of the people that do cold email lead gen to benefit from using a tool like ListKit, and people that don't even do cold email lead gen, I want them to use ListKit and find out the benefits of cold email if they're not already doing it. So I have these bigger visions. It's just like specific goals I couldn't really tell you.
I love that. That might be my favorite answer to that question so far.
Tony, I think you cut out there for a second, dude. I don't know if you're back.
All right, am I back? I'm back.
You're back. All right, Andre, now you got a hard stop.
I don't know if you guys didn't hear me, but I told like that was my favorite answer to that question, period.
Oh, ever. Thank you, dude. Yeah, I've done the goal setting. It's just never worked for me.
I love it.
All right, Andre, we got a hard stop. Come on. Okay, we got to cut this.
All right, go for it.
Fix it, Luca. Luca can fix it.
You got it.
All right, Andre. Selfish question again. I was going to ask you about your grandpa, actually, but we'll save that for a part two. What do you think we should name the podcast?
So we could talk about my grandpa for probably an entire podcast episode. So we should definitely do a part two, only if people got value from this one. So I would say if you guys got value from this one and you're still listening, show us a sign of life in the comments or something and let us know. It's always helpful. I've done podcasts before. It's like there's not the best analytics out on podcasts. So it's really hard to tell like if people enjoyed the episode or if they made it this far. And so the best way is for you guys to literally tell us in the form of a comment or thumbs up on the video or subscribe to these guys' channel. In terms of a podcast name, my whole thing is if we're thinking of it as like this is positioned to help you guys and your businesses grow, like you should name it the Ops Kings Podcast. So like one regret I have is like TikTok Podcast is one that we've been doing for over a year now. It's a cool name. Like it sounds cool, but it's terrible because people don't know what TikTok Podcast is unless they really know us. I wish we just named it the Client Ascension Podcast or like the Andre Hinkle Jr. Show, right? Like, so I would use your guys' name already that you already have established, like the Ops Kings Podcast. And there's really two ways to think about podcasts. You have the title, which should literally be like the Ops Kings Podcast, and then the subtitle, which explains what it is. So for example, Christian and I had a podcast that was way more successful than the podcast we're doing now, which is funny because now we're way more successful, but our podcast is way less successful. But the one that was successful back in the day was called Real Talk University. And like that doesn't tell you much, but the reason I think it was so successful is because the sub headline was so clear. It was Real Talk University - exploring success stories outside of the classroom. So people knew exactly what that podcast was about. They didn't know what Real Talk University meant necessarily, but the sub headline really explained it. So I don't think the name of the podcast is really all that important. I think because you guys are building a business called the Ops Kings, you should name it that because it's just going to show up in SEO and in other searches online when people go to search for your business. But really focus on what is that subheadline? Like, what are you, just explain what you're doing on the show.
Love it.
Cool.
There we go.
Very wise. That's, I love it. Sweet. And if anybody's looking for a way to get free consulting, 100% do a podcast, ask the guests just whatever you want to know from them. And it is fantastic. Yeah. Under getting consulting advice for free. Yeah, I think that's Tony.
That's it. Where should people reach out to you if they want to reach out to you?
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Just Andre Heichel Jr. on Twitter. That's where I'm most active. And in the comments as well. I always, anytime I do a podcast like this, I'll, you know, look at the video throughout the week or whatever and just see what people are saying. So I'm a really big guy on like communication. Like, tell us your thoughts, tell us your takeaways, your action items, your questions. I'm sure there's follow-up questions. But if you're watching this and you're subscribed and you're following, you know, Tony and Ryan, you're in the right place. You're already doing a lot of the right things. So just keep going down that path.
There we go. Andre Heichel Jr. That is it. That's the episode.
That's the episode.
Awesome. That was a blast.